This is Don Hollenbeck at the War Department in Washington. The Secretary of War has just released the following statement this 26th of April, 1865, and I quote it, "The War Department has received an unconfirmed report that John Wilkes Booth, the assassin of President Lincoln, is in the vicinity of Port Conway, Virginia. Lieutenant Baker and Colonel Conger, two of the ablest agents of the United States Detective Bureau, have been rushed to Port Conway with a detachment of cavalry, signed Edwin M. Stanton," unquote, and end of statement. Port Conway is about 50 miles directly south of the nation's capital in Confederate territory. It's a small town on the north bank of the Rappahannock
River. April 26, 1865. Port Conway has now wanted, dead or alive, John Wilkes Booth.
The most tragic manhunt in the history of the United States approaches its grim climax. CBS takes you back 84 years. The Civil War has ended. President Lincoln has been assassinated. North and South alike, shocked and appalled, wait for the capture of the man who killed him. Wait for the end of a bitter calamity. All things are as they were then, except for one thing. When CBS is there...
You are there.
You are there. Produced and directed by Robert Louis Cheyenne, is based on authentic historical fact and quotation. And now...
Washington, a coroner in the War Department, and Don Hollenbeck.
Today, it may see the capture of the well-known actor who only 12 days ago stole into a box at Ford's Theater here in Washington, fired a ball into the head of President Lincoln, and escaped. John Daly and Ned Kellner are in the area of Port Conway. They've been covering the manhunt with a CBS mobile unit, and we expect to hear from them momentarily. There have been charges that the federal government has been lax in its efforts to capture Booth, charges that Lincoln's assassination is part of a conspiracy that reaches high into the government. In the face of those charges, Secretary Stanton and the entire War Department are exerting their utmost efforts to end this manhunt, and today may see the break they've been waiting for. Quincy Howe has had a chance to weigh the possibilities inherent in the report that John Wilkes Booth is in Port Conway, so here is Quincy Howe.
Let me emphasize first that we have no confirmation yet for the report that John Wilkes Booth is in Port Conway, Virginia. During the past 12 days, we've had rumors that Booth was in Pennsylvania, that he was on board ship going to Europe, that he was in Maryland, in Canada, in Mexico, in fact, practically everywhere on the North American continent. But all these rumors, when nailed down, proved to be false, even fantastic. If, however, this report proves true, then the question arises, can Lieutenant Baker and Colonel Conger get to Port Conway in time to catch Booth? Never forget this. Booth is not standing still. He's desperate. He's on the move. The farther south he goes, the safer he becomes. Even suppose Baker and Conger do reach Port Conway before Booth gets out. Will they be able to capture him? Remember, they're in Confederate territory. Will a hostile population reveal Booth's whereabouts? And finally, how will these two detectives from the north stack up against the Confederate guerrillas? Although General Lee's army surrendered some days ago, many Confederate batteries have not yet stopped fighting. Mosby's brigade, for instance... Just a minute. John Daly and Ned Kalmer are already in Port Conway, Virginia. Go ahead, Port Conway.
This is John Daly. John Wilkes Booth is in this vicinity. He was here in Port Conway yesterday afternoon. May still be here now. Lieutenant Baker, the detective in charge of this searching party, told me that much a moment ago. Our CBS mobile unit is at the dock of the Port Conway ferry, and Lieutenant Baker is inside the ferryman's shack questioning him. Ned Kellner has been given permission to go inside, and the moment anything develops, he'll come out and tell us. To piece together the story of what happened when the cavalry...
Lieutenant Baker has definitely picked up Booth's trail now, but Booth is 24 hours ahead of the cavalry, and the question is whether Booth is in Bowling Green now, and if he is, why. There's perhaps one person in the country who might know the answer to those questions. Doug Edwards is with him in New York, so over to Doug Edwards.
I'm in the home of the distinguished actor Mr. Edwin Booth here in East 19th Street, New York. Mr. Edwin Booth is a brother of the hunted John Wilkes Booth. Mr. Booth, before any questions are put to you, is there anything you'd like to say?
Mr. Edwards, when a nation is overwhelmed with sorrow by a great public calamity, the mention of personal grief would, under ordinary circumstances, be an intrusion. But under those by which I am surrounded, I hope that a word from me will not be so regarded. It has pleased God to lay at the door of my afflicted family the blood of our deservedly popular president. Crushed to earth by this dreadful event, I am sensible that other mourners are in the land. To them, one and all, go forth our deep, unutterable sympathy, our abhorrence and detestation of this most foul and atrocious crime.
Mr. Booth, do you know of any special reason why your brother should go to Bowling Green?
I don't know, Mr. Edwards. John was very popular wherever he played in the South. He had many friends there. But I know of no reason for him to go to Bowling Green, except the hope that some of his Confederate friends might offer him sanctuary.
Mr. Booth, would you tell us something about your brother? Many of us have seen him in the theater, but what is he like off the stage?
John was a wild, scatterbrained sort of boy, quite impulsive and theatrical. John is vain, self-conscious, too handsome for his own good, hot-tempered. Yet I've known him to be kind, gentle, full of fun. And I was happy that he was my brother. He was always his mother's darling. And this has crushed her heart and spirit.
Mr. Booth, do you have any idea why your brother killed President Lincoln?
He was insane. Insane on the subject of Lincoln. John's sympathies were always with the South, and he blamed Lincoln for all the South's troubles. I recall the day I told him I had voted for Lincoln. He flew into an insane rage and screamed at me that Lincoln wanted to be king of America. I imagine that the news of Lee's surrender drove his mind beyond the limits of reason.
Mr. Booth, somewhere in Virginia, at this very moment, they may be capturing your brother. Have you any comment to make?
I am sure that God will not permit him to go unpunished. He is my brother, but it is far better that he be dead than prolong this shame and humiliation by a public trial.
Thank you, Mr. Booth.
There is something I would like to add, if I may.
Yes, Mr. Booth, say anything you like.
I would like to say, for my mother and sister and my two remaining brothers and myself, that we pray that our loyalty as citizens will be judged by the record of the past. For our present position, we are not responsible. For the future, I shall carry a heavy heart, an oppressed memory, and a wounded name. Dreadful burdens. To a too welcome grave.
Thank you, Mr. Edwin Booth. You mentioned that there are other mourners in the land. Some of them, at this moment, are in Little Falls, New York, waiting for the lonesome train. The train carrying the late President Lincoln to his last resting place in Springfield, Illinois. Ken Roberts has been on that train since it began its sad journey. We take you to him now aboard the lonesome train at Little Falls, New York.
The lonesome train is on a siding a few hundred yards up the track from the depot here at Little Falls, New York. It stopped a moment ago to take on water. Soldiers are standing at attention alongside of each car, and on the ground, in the gloom, are a handful of people, men and women. This lonesome train has passed through many of the great cities and heard the eulogies of high dignitaries, but here, behind these sad faces, are the farmers,
shopkeepers, the little people of whom Lincoln himself was one. They're standing here silently, their eyes running the length of this dimly lit six-car train, always pausing at the third car, which they know holds the casket of their beloved late president. There's the train bell warning that we'll be moving in a minute. Now the soldiers of the honor guard are climbing back up into the cars, and this funeral train is about to continue its lonesome journey westward. Someone has begun to sing. Spontaneously, simply. It's the battle hymn of the Republic. Now others are joining in. Let's listen. Mobile unit in Virginia.
This is Ned Calmer. Lieutenant Baker and the cavalry detachment rode into Bowling Green 20 minutes ago. They found out that one of the Confederate soldiers who came across the Fort Conway Ferry with Booth is here at the town hotel now. The soldier's name is Willie Jett. Booth and Harold may be with him. We're outside the hotel now waiting. John Daly is inside with Lieutenant Baker. The cavalry have the hotel completely surrounded. And now some of the townsfolk of Bowling Green have wandered up here to the hotel to see what's going on. Most of them have just put on a coat or a pair of pants over their nightclothes. Here's John Daly coming out again. I'll turn the microphone over to him.
Booth is not here. He may be at a place called Garrett's Farm, a few miles up the road, the farm we passed on the way down here to Bowling Green. Lieutenant Baker got that information out of Willie Jett, who is here at the hotel. Jett said he left Booth and Davy Harold at Garrett's Farm last night. Lieutenant Baker has placed Jett under arrest. He's being taken along to point out the Garrett Farm. We're going there now, so back to Don Hollenbeck in Washington.
It begins to appear that Booth is getting help from some Southerners, and the big question now is the attitude of the entire South. How far will it go to help Booth escape? There's one man who might speak for the South. He's the former president of the Confederacy, Jefferson Davis. Mr. Davis is in the custody of federal troops in Irwinsville, Georgia, but he's consented to make a statement. So we switch you now to Irwinsville, Georgia, and CBS correspondent Arthur Hannis.
Mr. Davis, what is the South's feeling about the assassination of President Lincoln by John Wilkes Booth?
I would like to say, have it fully understood, that the South does not, nor will it ever condone this cowardly, villainous act of John Wilkes Booth. I'll give you my assurance that the assassination of Lincoln was not plotted, nor given implement or comfort by any member of the Confederacy. History will prove that it was a conspiracy of certain congressmen to dispose of Abraham Lincoln and place a man of their choice in his place. All decent and honorable people in the southern states are shocked. Shocked by his murder. Booth is no hero to us. He will be no martyr to the Confederacy. He will receive no welcome among the gentlemen and women of the South.
Thank you, Mr. Jefferson Davis. John Daly and Ned Calmer have reached Garrett's Farm, so we switch you to our mobile unit somewhere near Bowling Green, Virginia.
This is John Daly. The cavalrymen have surrounded the barn here at Garrett's Farm. It's a small barn, only about 20 by 30 feet. Booth and Davy Harold are almost certainly in there. They were locked in by the young Garrett boys who were afraid they might steal their horses. When the cavalry came up, they roused the Garrett family and quickly found out that the two men Willie Jett had brought to the farm were still here. Lieutenant Baker has ordered young Garrett to open
you
the barn door. Now Lieutenant Baker is speaking.
Inside the barn! Come out!
inside the barn. A man's voice calling out, "Who are you and what do you want?" It may have been Booth's voice if he is inside.
I've been taken by my friends. Who are you?
Makes no difference who we are. We have 50 armed men here. You have no chance to escape.
Around to the other side of the barn where Ned Kelmer is. So go ahead, Kelmer.
They're
They're planting the straw at the side and rear of the barn out here, John. The plan is evidently to set the barn ablaze at the back, and that would drive Booth out through the front door. They're piling up the straw, all right, piling it up high. Now they're lighting handfuls of it, pushing it in through the cracks of the barn. Evidently more straw inside.
Watch it now. Contact.
One of the soldiers has just thrown a torch into this dry brush. It blazes up quickly. And now I can see a red glow inside the barn. It's getting brighter in there as the fire starts to take hold. Yes, I can see Booth in there. I can see him clearly through the cracks. I'm only a few yards away from where he is. The fire is lighting up the whole inside of the barn, almost like day. Yes, I can see Booth standing there, leaning on his crutch, his rifle in his hand. And now he's looking back at the flames behind him. He's limping up toward the door. I think he's coming out. I think he's coming out. Go ahead, John Daly.
The door is opening. Yes, it is opening. And John Wilkes Booth is now standing there defiantly, silhouetted against a background of flame. But now he's gone behind the door just a step. I can't see. There's a shot. A shot. Booth has fallen to the floor of the barn. Maybe he shot himself. He said he'd never be taken alive. Baker and Conger have just rushed into the barn, and the barn is an inferno. It's going up quick. The dry brush has sent the dry wood afire, and flames are climbing up into the sky, but they're carrying Booth out now, taking him a little ways up from the barn. Hey, let me through here.
Stand back! Stand back!
God won't let me through. A man is blocking my way. Booth is lying on the ground about 15 feet away. He's not dead, but he seems to be in agonizing pain. Blood is running down the back and side of his head. Baker and Conger are bending over him. His lips are moving. He's having difficulty breathing. And now Lieutenant Baker has gotten up. He's coming over this way.
Lieutenant Baker! Hey, Lieutenant Baker!
How bad is Booth?
He's dying. We can't save him.
Joe, get the cart over here.
But Lieutenant, I saw his lips move. What did he say?
He said, tell my mother I died for my country.
He was shot in the head, wasn't he?
Yes, behind the ear. In almost the identical spot he shot Lincoln.
But was he shot by one of your men, or did he shoot himself?
I don't know. That's what I'm going to try to find out now.
All right, Joe.
Oh, wait a minute, Lieutenant. Yes. Are you certain that it's really Booth?
Of course it's Booth. Harold said Booth was in the barn with him. Besides, I've identified him positively.
Well, you just heard Lieutenant Baker say, without qualification of any kind, that the dying man is John Wilkes Booth. No one around here seems to be very happy. There's no anger, no spirit of revenge. There just seems to be a sense of a grim job that had to be done.
April 26, 1865. John Wilkes Booth, the man who shot Lincoln, is captured and dies.
You have been listening to The Capture of John Wilkes Booth, another broadcast in the series You Are There, produced and directed by Robert Louis Cheyenne. The Capture of John Wilkes Booth is written by J. Franklin Jones. Edwin Booth was played by Richard Waring, John Wilkes Booth by Scott Scottsworth, and the cast included John Sylvester, Raymond Edward Johnson, Charles Webster, Matt Crowley, Guy Sorrell, James Dobson, and others. Next week,
January 7th, 49 B.C., Caesar at the Rubicon. You are there.
Tonight, the Hit Parade on Parade comes marching to CBS to take over the Jack Benny spot for the summer. The Hit Parade on Parade brings you specially modernized versions of the highlights of the Hit Parade's outstanding programs of the past. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.